Chapter 26, the last chapter, When to Surrender. Lan slipped through the corridors of the Eastashar alone, using every bit of the skill he had learned in the Blight, taking care not to round a corner until he was certain the hallway ahead was empty. Wrapped in the Kodi, he could almost feel it whenever someone entered the corridor behind him, feel the beginning of another presence, and duck out of sight through an open door or an archway before whoever it was could see him. He might have been a ghost. Anya and Esni took Idain's commands ahead of his now, as though they believed that some part of Malkyri ways. She might have told them it was. Bulin remained loyal, he believed so, but he expected that anyone in the Eastashar wearing livery would tell Idain where to find him. He thought he knew where he was now. Despite those previous visits, without a guide he had gotten lost twice since leaving his rooms, and only a feel for direction let him find himself again. He felt a fool for wearing his sword. Steel was no use in this battle. But he felt naked without it, and naked was one thing he could not afford to be against Idain. A flicker of movement made him flatten himself against the wall behind a statue of a woman clad in clouds, her arms full of flowers. Just in time. Two women came out of the crossing corridor ahead, pausing in close conversation. Izella and the Aes Sedai Mirian. He was as still as the stone he hid behind. It was motion that attracted eyes. He did not like skulking, but while Idain was untying the knot in his deori that had kept him penned for 2 days, she had made it clear that she intended to announce his marriage to Izella soon. Bukama had been right. Idain used his deori like reins. By custom, most of her power over him would end once Izella had the cord of his hair among her keepsakes. No longer any more than a token of the past. Yet he was certain Idain would use Izella herself in its place. And Izella would cooperate. He doubted that she had the strength to stand against her mother openly. The only thing to do when faced by an opponent you could not defeat was run, unless your death could serve some greater purpose. And he very much wanted to run. Only Bukama held him here. Bukama and a dream. At a sharp gesture from Mirian, Izella nodded eagerly and hurried back the way they had come. For a moment, Mirian watched her go, face unreadable in Aes Sedai serenity. Then surprisingly, she followed, gliding along the green floor tiles in a way that made Izella look awkward. Lan did not waste time wondering what Mirian was up to, any more than he had in wondering why Moraine wanted her watched. A man could go mad trying to puzzle out Aes Sedai. Which Moraine really must be, or Mirian would have her howling up and down the corridors. Waiting long enough for the pair to move well out of sight again, he slipped quietly to the corner and peeked. They were both gone, so he hurried on. Aes Sedai were no concern of his today. He had to talk to Bukama. About dreams. Running would end Idain's schemes of marriage. If he avoided her long enough, she would find another husband for Izella. Running would end Idain's dream of reclaiming Malkyr. Her support would fade like mist under a noon sun once people learned he was gone. Running would end many dreams. The man who had carried an infant tied to his back had a right to dreams, though. Duty was a mountain, but it had to be carried. Ahead lay a long flight of broad stone-railed stairs. He turned to start down, and suddenly he was falling. He just had time to go limp, and then he was bouncing from step to step, tumbling head over heels, landing on the tiled floor at the bottom with a crash that drove the last remaining air from his lungs. Spots shimmered in front of his eyes. He struggled to breathe, to push himself up. Servants appeared from nowhere, helping him to his feet, all exclaiming over his luck in not killing himself in such a fall, asking whether he wanted to see one of the Aes Sedai for healing. Frowning dizzily up the stairway, he murmured replies, anything in hope of making them go away. He thought he might be as bruised as he had ever been in his life, but bruises went away, and the last thing he wanted at that moment was a sister. Most men would have fought that fall, and been lucky to end with half their bones broken. Something had jerked his ankles up there. Something had hit him between the shoulders. There was only one thing it could have been, however little sense it made. He would have known had anyone been close enough to touch him physically. An Aes Sedai had tried to kill him with the power.
Lord Mandragoran! A stocky man in the green coat of a palace guard skidded to a halt and nearly fell over trying to bow while still moving.
"We've been looking for you everywhere, my lord," he panted. "It's your man, Bukama. Come quickly, my lord. He may still be alive."
Cursing, Lan ran behind the guard, shouting for the man to go faster, but he was too late. Too late for the man who had carried an infant. Too late for dreams. Guards crowding a narrow passage just off one of the practice yards squeezed back to let Lan through. Bukama lay face down, blood pooled around his mouth, the plain wooden hilt of a dagger rising from the dark stain on the back of his coat. His staring eyes looked surprised. Kneeling, Lan closed those eyes and murmured a prayer for the last embrace of the mother to welcome Bukama home.
"Who found him?"
he asked, but he barely heard the jumbled replies about who and where and what. He hoped Bukama was reborn in a world where the golden crane flew on the wind, and the seven towers stood unbroken, and the thousand lakes shone like a necklace beneath the sun. How could he have let anyone get close enough to do this? Bukama could feel steel being unsheathed near him. Only one thing was sure. Bukama was dead because Lan had tangled him in an Aes Sedai's schemes. Rising, he began to run again. Not away from anything, though. Toward someone. And he did not care who saw him.
The muffled crash of the door in the anteroom and outraged shouts from the serving women lifted Moiraine from the cushioned armchair where she had been waiting. For anything but this. Embracing Sayadar, she started from the sitting room, but before she reached the door it swung open. Lan shook off the liveried women clinging to his arms, shut the door in their faces, and put his back to it, meeting Moiraine's startled gaze. Purpling bruises marred his angular face, and he moved as if he had been beaten. From outside came silence. Whatever he intended, they would be sure she could handle it. Absurdly, she found herself fingering her belt knife. With the power, she could wrap him up like a child, however large he was, and yet... He did not glare. There certainly was no fire in those eyes. She wanted to step back. No fire, but death seared cold. That black coat suited him with its cruel thorns and stark golden blossoms. "Bukama is dead with a knife in his heart," he said calmly. "And not an hour gone, someone tried to kill me with the one power. At first I thought it must be Marian, but the last I saw of her, she was trailing after Isella, and unless she saw me and wanted to lull me, she had no time. Few see me when I do not want to be seen, and I don't think she did. That leaves you." Moiraine winced, and only in part for the certainty in his tone. She should have known the fool girl would go straight to Marian. "You would be surprised how little escapes a sister," she told him, "especially if the sister was filled with Sayadar. Perhaps I should not have asked Bukama to watch Marian. She is very dangerous." The woman was Black Aja. She was certain of that now. Sisters might make painful examples of people caught snooping, but they did not kill them. But what to do about her? Certainty was not proof, surely not proof that would stand up before the Ammerlin seat. And if Sierran herself was black, not a worry she could do anything about now. What was the woman doing wasting any time at all with Isella? "If you care for the girl, I suggest you find her as quickly as possible and keep her away from Marian." Lan grunted. "All Aes Sedai are dangerous. Isella is safe enough for the moment. I saw her on my way here, hurrying somewhere with Briss and Dirik. Why did Bukama die, Aes Sedai? What did I snare him in for you?" Moiraine flung up a hand for silence, and a tiny part of her was surprised when he obeyed. The rest of her thought furiously. Marian with Isella. Isella with Briss and Dirik. Marian had tried to kill Lan. Suddenly she saw a pattern, perfect in every line. It made no sense, but she did not doubt it was real. "Dirik told me you are the luckiest man in the world," she said, leaning toward Lan intently. "And for his sake, I hope he was right. Where would Briss go for absolute privacy? Somewhere he would not be seen or heard. It would have to be a place he felt comfortable, yet isolated."
"There is a walk on the west side of the palace," Lan said slowly. Then his voice quickened. If there is danger to Briss, I must rouse the guards.
He was already turning, hand on the door handle. No, she said. She still held the power, and she prepared a weave of air to seize him if necessary. Prince Briss will not appreciate having his guards burst in if Marian is simply talking to him.
And if she is not talking, he demanded.
Then there is not enough time for rousing the guards if they would come. We have no proof of anything against her, Lan. Suspicions against the word of an Aes Sedai.
His head jerked angrily, and he growled something about Aes Sedai that she deliberately did not hear.
She would have had to make him smart for it, and there was no time. Take me to this walk, Lan. Let Aes Sedai deal with Aes Sedai, and let us hurry. If Marian did any talking, Moiraine did not expect her to talk for long. Hurry, Lan surely did, long legs flashing as he ran. All she could do was gather her skirts high and run after him, ignoring the stares and murmurs of servants and others in the corridors at her exposure of stockinged legs, thanking the light that the man did not outpace her. She let the power fill her as she ran, till sweetness and joy bordered pain in their intensity, and tried to plan what she would do, what she could do, against a woman considerably stronger than she, a woman who had been Aes Sedai more than 100 years before her own great-grandmother was born. She wished she were not so afraid. She wished Swan were with her. The mad dash led through glittering state chambers, along statuary-lined hallways, and suddenly they were into the open, the sounds of the palace left behind, on a long stone-railed walk, 20 paces wide, with a vista across the city roofs far below. A cold wind blew like a storm, tugging at her skirts. Marian was there, surrounded by the glow of Sidar, and Briss and Dirrick, standing by the rail, twisting futilely against bonds and gags of air. Isella was frowning at the prince and his son, and surprisingly, further down the walk stood a glowering Rhine, his arms folded across his chest. So he was a dark friend.
"And I could hardly bring Lord Dirrick to you without his father," Isella was saying petulantly. "I did make sure no one knows, but why—"
Weaving a shield of spirit, Moiraine hurled it at Marian with every shred of the power in her, hoping against hope to cut the woman off from the source. The shield struck and splintered. Marian was too strong, drawing too near her capacity. She knew she had caught the blue sister, the black sister, by surprise, but Marian did not even blink.
"You did well enough killing the spy, Rhine," she said calmly as she wove a gag of air to stop up Isella's mouth and bonds that held the girl stiff and wide-eyed. "See if you can make certain of the younger one this time. You did say you are a better swordsman."
Everything seemed to happen at once. Rhine rushed forward, scowling, the bells in his braids chiming. Lan barely got his own sword out in time to meet him. And before the first clash of steel on steel, Marian struck at Moiraine with the same weave she herself had used, but stronger. In horror, Moiraine realized that Marian might have sufficient strength remaining to shield her, even while she was embracing as much of Sidar as she could. Frantically, she struck out with air and fire, and Marian grunted as the severed flows snapped back into her. In the brief interval, Moiraine tried to slice the flows holding Dirrick and the others, but before her weave touched Marian's, Marian sliced hers instead, and this time Marian's attempted shield actually touched her before she could cut it. Moiraine's stomach tried to tie itself in a knot.
"You appear too often, Moiraine," Marian said, as though they were simply chatting. She looked as if there were no more to it, serene and motherly, not in the slightest perturbed. "I fear I must ask you how and why."
Moiraine just managed to sever a weave of fire that would have burned off her clothes and perhaps most of her skin, and Marian smiled, a mother, amused at the mischief young women get up to.
"Don't worry, child. I'll heal you to answer my questions. And answer you will. Out here, no one will hear your screams."
If Moiraine had had any lingering doubts that Marian was Black Ajra, that weave of fire would have ended them. In the next moments she had more proof, weavings that made sparks dance on her dress and her hair rise, weavings that had her gasping for air that was no longer there, weavings she could not recognize,
It surely would have left her broken and bleeding if they settled around her, if she had failed to cut them. When she could, she tried again and again to cut the bonds holding Derek and the others, to shield Marianne, even to knock her unconscious. She knew she fought for her life. She would die if the other woman won, now or after Marianne's questioning, but she never considered that loophole in the oaths that held her. She had questions of her own for the woman, and the fate of the world might rest on the answers. Unfortunately, most of what she could do was defend herself, and that always on the brink. Her stomach was in a knot, and trying to make another. Holding three people bound, Marianne was still a match for her, and maybe more. If only Lan could distract the woman. A hasty glance showed how unlikely that was. Lan and Rhine danced the forms, gracefully flowing from one to another, their blades like whirlwinds, but if there was a hair between their abilities, it rested with Rhine. Blood fanned down the side of Lan's face. Grimly, Moiraine bore down, not even sparing the bit of concentration necessary to ignore the cold. Shivering, she struck at Marianne, defended herself and struck again, defended and struck. If she could manage to wear the woman down, or... "This is taking too long, don't you think, child?" Marianne said. Derek floated into the air, struggling against the bonds he could not see as he drifted over the railing. Briss's head twisted following his son, and his mouth worked around his unseen gag. "No!" Moiraine screamed. Desperately she flung out flows of air to drag the boy back to safety. Marianne slashed them even as she released her own hold on him. Wailing, Derek fell, and white light exploded in Moiraine's head. Groggily she opened her eyes, the boy's fading shriek still echoing in her mind. She was on her back on the stone walk, her head spinning. Until that cleared, she had as much chance of embracing Sidar as a cat did of singing. Not that it made any difference now. She could see the shield Marianne was holding on her, and even a weaker woman could maintain a shield once in place. She tried to rise, fell back, managed to push up on an elbow. Only moments had passed. Lan and Rhine still danced their deadly dance to the clash of steel. Briss was rigid for more than his bonds, staring at Marianne with such implacable hate it seemed he might break free on the strength of his rage. Isella was trembling, snuffling and weeping and staring wide-eyed at where the boy had fallen. Derek. Moiraine made herself think the boy's name, flinched to recall his grinning enthusiasm. Only moments. "You will hold a little longer for me, I think," Marianne said, turning away from her. Briss rose above the walk. The stocky man's face never changed, never stopped staring hatred at Marianne. Moiraine struggled to her knees. She could not channel. She had no courage left, no strength, only determination. Briss floated over the railing. Moiraine tottered to her feet. Determination. That look of pure hate etched on his face, Briss fell, never making a sound. This had to end. Isella lifted into the air, writhing frantically, throat working in an effort to scream past her gag. It had to end, now. Stumbling, Moiraine drove her belt knife into Marianne's back to the hilt, blood spurting over her hands. They fell to the paving stones together, the glow around Marianne vanishing as she died, the shield on Moiraine vanishing. Isella screamed, swaying where Marianne's bonds had let her drop, atop the stone railing. Pushing herself to move, Moiraine scrambled across Marianne's corpse, seized one of Isella's flailing hands in hers, just as the girl's slippers slid off into open air. The jolt pulled Moiraine belly down across the railing, staring down at the girl held by her blood-slick grip above a drop that seemed to go on forever. It was all Moiraine could do to hold them where they were, teetering. If she tried to pull the girl up, they would both go over. Isella's face was contorted, her mouth a rictus. Her hand slipped in Moiraine's grasp. Forcing herself to calm, Moiraine reached for the source and failed. Staring down at those distant rooftops did not help her whirling head. Again she tried, but it was like trying to scoop up water with spread fingers. She would save one of the three, though, if the most useless of them. Fighting dizziness, she strove for Sidar, and Isella's hand slid out of her bloody fingers. All Moiraine could do was watch her fall, shrieking a long, dwindling cry, hand still stretched up as if she believed someone might yet save her. An arm pulled Moiraine away from the railing.
"Never watch a death you don't have to," Lan said, setting her on her feet.
His right arm hung at his side, a long slash laying open the blood-soaked sleeve and the flesh beneath, and he had other injuries besides the gash on his scalp that still trickled red down his face. Rhine lay on his back 10 paces away, staring at the sky in sightless surprise.
"A black day," Lan muttered. "As black as ever I've seen."
"A moment," she told him, her voice unsteady. "I am too dizzy to walk far yet." Her knees wavered as she walked to Marian's body. There would be no answers. The black Aja would remain hidden. Bending, she withdrew her belt knife from the woman's back and cleaned it on the traitor's skirts.
"You are a cool one, Aes Sedai," Lan said flay.
"As cool as I must be," she told him. Dirik's scream rang in her ears. Isella's face dwindled below her. As in the test for the shawl, all her calm was outward show, but she clung to it tightly. Let go for an instant and she would be on her knees weeping, howling with grief. "It seems Rhine was wrong, as well as a dark friend. You were better than he." Lan shook his head slightly.
"He was better, but he thought I was finished with only one arm. He never understood. You surrender after you're dead."
Moiraine nodded. "Surrender after you are dead,
yes."
It took a little while for her head to clear enough that she could embrace the source again, and she had to put up with Lan's anxiety to let the Shatayan know that Briss and Dirik were dead before word came that their bodies had been found on the rooftops. Understandably, he seemed less eager to inform the Lady Idaine of her daughter's death. Moiraine was anxious about time, too, if not for the same reasons. She should have been able to save the girl. That death lay on her as much as on Marian. She healed Lan as soon as she was able, and he gasped in shock as the complex weaves of spirit, air, and water knit up his wounds, flesh writhing together into unscarred wholeness, but she felt no satisfaction that he finally showed himself mortal. He was weak afterward, drained by healing atop his fight, weak enough to catch his breath leaning on the stone rail. He would run nowhere for a while. She had to make sure he knew what to say, and she had other plans for him. Carefully she floated Marian's body over that rail on flows of air and down a little, close to the stone of the mountain. Flows of fire and flame enveloped the Black Sister. Flame so hot there was no smoke, only a thick shimmering in the air and the occasional crack of a splitting rock.
"What are you?"
Lan began, then changed it to,
"Why?"
She let herself feel the rising heat, currents of air fit for a furnace. There is no proof she was Black Aja, only that she was Aes Sedai. She winced at her slip. The White Tower needed its armor of secrecy again, more than it had when Malkyr died, but she could not tell him that, not yet. But he did not so much as blink at mention of the Black Aja. Perhaps he was ignorant of it, but she would not wager on it. The man was as self-contained as any sister. "I cannot lie about what happened here, but I can be silent. Will you be silent? Or will you do the shadow's work?"
"You are a very hard woman," he said finally.
That was the only answer he gave, but it was enough. "I'm as hard as I must be," she told him. Dirik's scream. Isella's face. There was still Rhine's body to dispose of, and the blood on the floorstones, on their clothing. "As hard as she must be,"